Okay. Okay, let's get started. Before introducing what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about the article that has been distributed. It's called In the Long Run. Everyone have it? Read it? Okay, interesting article? Okay. We'll have to see what this has anything to do with workplace halacha in a little bit. So this is a story about Yoni Fink. Yoni Fink was encountering certain significant challenges in life, and this article is about his overcoming them. And I'd like to ask you a few questions about this article. Number one, what are the main issues that Yoni Fink was dealing with at the beginning of the article?
Yeah.
Wait. Number one. Simon?
Low self-esteem.
Low self-esteem. Very good. Anything else? There's actually a third one in there.
He was quite lazy.
Lazy, and how about his learning abilities?
He was focused on his learning.
Was it a problem with him, or problem? Was it a genetic issue? Was it a health issue?
Sounded like
he was diagnosed with something. ADD, right? He had learning disabilities and ADD. So that's a lot to deal with. Question number two is, what specific event inspired him to turn his life around? Yeah.
There's two. One, when he was swimming, he realized how out of shape he was. And then when he saw the sign, I think at the bus stop, he saw a sign for a marathon, a 10K, 21K, and a 42. And that kind of just inspired him to kind of sign up to it.
So there's Yoni. He went out to dinner with his cousin. What'd they eat?
Steak.
A big one or a small one?
Big one.
He wanted two, right? He wanted a second one. There they are. And his cousin afterwards says, after that, I would need to exercise about 10 hours, right? And he gets some exercise. Yoni says, no, can do. But he felt bad telling his cousin he's not going to go exercise because his cousin treated him to this very expensive dinner at the Ramada Hotel. Yoni goes around. No way is he going to go into the exercise room. So he says, what's going to be easier? Let's go swimming, right? Swimming. So was he successful at that? No, he couldn't even get across the width way of the pool. Decides to tread water for a little bit. He gets out of the pool. He says, I am in bad shape. We'd call that he hit bottom right then. He can't get across the pool the short way. Hits bottom, says, I need to make a change in my life. Goes out, barely is able to walk to the bus stop because he is, how much overweight is he? How much does he weigh? 283 pounds. And how tall is he? 5'7". How tall is 5'7" for the guys outside the United States of America? 5'7". Here's somebody who is 5'7". How much do you weigh? Can you tell your 300 closest friends here?
Pretty built, like 68
kilos.
68 kilos? What's that in pounds, guys?
150.
Okay, this is 283 pounds. That's 133 pounds. That's almost double. It's almost double what we have here. So Yoni says, I need to make a change. So what does he go ahead and do in order to overcome his issues? What's the process that he goes through?
Sets a goal.
He what? Sets goals?
Yeah.
Who does he speak with first?
His rabbi.
It's like his mentor, Rabbi Testa. He says, you know what? I have an idea here. I went out. I could barely make it to the bus stop. I saw these signs for the Jerusalem Marathon. I want to go for 10K. 10 kilometers, that's a real goal. That's setting goals. So he speaks with his rabbi. What does the rabbi tell him? Don't bother. You're 283 pounds.
CDC or something.
CDC. What does CDC stand for?
Commitment,
dedication, and consistency. That's what's required. If you want to train, if you want to get there, CDC, it is what's necessary. So number one, he speaks with his mentor. Number two, he sets goals. Realistic goals, hopefully. Took him a while to get there, right? Sets goals. Number three, what else? What do you need to do?
Change your
lifestyle. Motivation. I think that number one is motivation, right? You need motivation. He consulted with somebody. CDC is his mantra. And one other interesting thing that is kind of mentioned backhandedly, but I think is absolutely critical, is that he forced himself to go to bed early every night. 10:30 p.m. in bed, so he would be able to accomplish what he needed the next day. Sleep should not be underrated. Sleep is very, very critical in order for us to function. So I jotted down what I think were his keys to success. Number one, motivation. He had a reason to make a big change. Number two, he had a rabbi and mentor to consult with. Number three, he had goals. And it's interesting, at the end of the piece here, it says that he actually continued this into the future. Yoni went ahead, he got married, and what did he continue doing? Exercising, eating healthy, sticking with an organized lifestyle. How was he able to accomplish all that? CDC. What does that stand for again? Consistency, dedication. I mixed it up. What's the first one? Commitment, dedication, and consistency. Question for you. What does this have to do with Koveya Itim Latorah, the topic that we are just coming off of? Does it have anything to do with Koveya? And they're cheap seats.
It's like running a like it looks like a big deal, but if you're committed and you stay consistent, you're dedicated to the idea of doing Gavyomi or whatever it is, you'll be successful, and then you'll build the right habits that it'll seem like second nature for them.
Commitment, dedication, and consistency. So this has everything to do with being successful and being Koveya Itim Latorah. We're going to draw on these topics that this article brings out, I think, very clearly for us. Let me introduce us to our topic then, and you will see the direct fit. I got an email from somebody who learned here in Yeshiva, and he gave me an overview of how everything was going. He went back, he's from South Africa originally, he had moved to Australia, and he gave me a detailed email about how interviewing went, how he explained to them Shabbos and Yontif issues, how things were going at work with Jewish, non-Jewish issues, holiday parties. I love getting these emails, guys, so when you get back into the secular workplace, if you do so, send me emails, let me know how you're going, let me know the big issues that are coming up. There are always new issues, so I like to be kept abreast of what's going out on in the secular workplace. So he talked about the Shabbos, Hagim workplace, and at the way end of the email, this is the email, it's one page, and then on the second page, he says as follows. It has been tough to find time to learn as much as I would like, and I have found that to be my biggest challenge. His biggest challenge is being Koveya Itim Latorah. Leaving yeshiva and learning all day gets you used to a certain level of learning that you just can't keep up in a working world. And he goes on and says he's going to try to go to this year and that year, but ultimately his biggest challenge, getting out there, quote, into the work world, sometimes called the real world, but this is the real world, but it's referred to as the real world, is how do you find time for your ruchnius, for your spirituality? There's a book that I highly recommend. It's called The Ethical Imperative. It's put out by Art Scroll. And it's a compendium of articles. I think it was articles that were put out in the Jewish Observer magazine. So it put together, and it's quite a long book. It's 500 and almost 600 pages. And in here, there are some very instructive articles for us. And one of them is just a two-pager, and it's called An Open Letter to My Friend on the Slide. An Open Letter to My Friend on the Slide. It doesn't even say the name of the author on it, but this whoever wrote it is addressing the guy in shul that's walking around like a zombie. Apparently, this is what the letter says, you just must have come back from yeshiva learning in Kolo, the base medrash, and now you're in the secular work world, and the contrast is dramatic between the learning and the high level that you were on, and now the realities of dealing with the obstacles and challenges of secular life. And he says, many of us have gone through the same thing. This is more like a general letter. It's not addressed to one person. He's saying, people who are on the slide. Many of us have gone through the same thing. Schedules that have suddenly grown hectic, and adjustments to new responsibilities which throw people off the patterns of life they have so carefully cultivated. He says, you know, you're in the rat race. He doesn't say it in those words, right? The rat race of work. You don't even have time because you're so busy to pick up your dry cleaning. That's the example. Somebody who's had an intense job, that's like the example that you have. Do you have time to pick up your dry cleaning? No one does, right? Can't bring it in. Once it's in, it sits there for a few weeks because you don't have time to get it out. So he says, it must be very hard for you. I see your frustration that you're experiencing. Your self-esteem must be taking a hit because you had expected to be able to learn more, to be keeping up your studies, and now, unfortunately, you see that slipping away. What we're going to draw on in this class as we go forward is various advice, suggestions that I asked. I actually emailed around to a bunch of friends and prior students and said, I'm teaching a class on how do you continue learning once you get out into the secular workplace. What are your suggestions? So this is the email that I sent around. It says, I'm doing some research for an article focused on what we can do to stay motivated to continue learning Torah over the long term, right? You get out of yeshiva, you're okay for a few weeks, few months, few years, but then as things get going, it gets tougher and tougher, in particular when working in the secular workplace and juggling work, family, bills, and the general challenges of life. Unfortunately, sometimes the learning gets left behind over time. Please give me your advice. So that's what we're going to cover, Amir Tashem, as we go through today. We're going to talk about getting out there. We've talked about last time the importance of being koveit in the Torah, having set times to learn twice a day. Usually it's one in the morning, one at night. The big one, maybe that night is big also, but typically the morning, early morning, is when we have a little bit more time. At night, maybe it's shorter. It really depends on the situation in life and job and family. So we're going to talk about how do you keep up that motivation 5, 10, and 20 years out. So these are suggestions right now. These aren't solutions because there's really no clear solution, but the suggestions, hopefully people take what will work best for them. So number one is motivation. If you don't have motivation, you're going to be highly challenged. So motivation is number one. How do you have motivation? So my first suggestion is learning about the importance of learning Torah. I recommend this book. It's called The Torah's Habayis by the Chofetz Chaim. It's an entire book on the importance of learning Torah in this world and for our world to come. This looks longer than it really is. I actually have a prior version also, and it's like this thick. It's a really tiny book. Here they reprinted it, and it's got a lot of very large font size on each page. So this would be number one, is learn constantly about the importance of learning. So that's number one. Number two, to increase motivation, keep your motivation going, is find a role model who is being successful. Role model who is learning, who's out there, who's continuing, who's got that motivation. I just want to give one example of a role model. Jonathan Rosenblum wrote an article about Gilgal obligates all of us. So it's about an Israeli, Gilgal, and it says that he lives on a non-religious moshav. He works at a very intense job. He keeps him out of the household 11 hours a day. And he was chozer b'tshuva. And he says within 5 years of his being chozer b'tshuva, he had already learned the entire Shas. Now, he did it using art scroll. So it's not like he did it the old-fashioned hard way. He kind of used the modern crutch. But he did it nonetheless. And Gilgal says, how are people not learning Gemara when you go up? How are you learning everything? When you go up to heaven, they're going to ask you, what mesechtas did you learn? I want to have the answer that I covered it all. So he says, so why is he so successful? He says, because he's organized. He's an engineer by trade, so he's organized. His concept is, the sentence is as follows. What he does possess is an engineer's ability to set goals and figure out what must be done to reach them. So that's necessary when you go out. You've got to set a goal. You got to have your head in the game. You've got to constantly be analyzing, is this working for me? Is it not working for me? And changing and adapting. These are some very instructive points. He says, Gal realized that to keep to the schedule he set out for himself, and this is his schedule, daily schedule. It includes daily learning of Chumash with Ramban, Tehillim with Rashi and Malbim, and Shmila Shalashon, including Gemara, etc. He would have to give up everything in his life besides work, time with his family, and learning. It requires focus, right? CDC. And a little bit sleep he'd have to give up on also. It also means learning every single day with no exceptions. No matter how tired he is or how late he returns home, he never goes to sleep without learning, and it means making every minute count. He goes on to say he carries photocopies of whatever he's learning for that day. In case he has a few minutes, he pulls it out and he uses that time very well. So number one was learn about the importance of learning, learn the Torah's advice. Number two, find role models to emulate. Number three, what should you be learning? Musar Lacha, but what you enjoy. What you enjoy. Hopefully you learn Musar Lacha. And find something in Musar Lacha to enjoy also, right? So you got to learn something you enjoy. If you don't enjoy it, you ain't going to do it. So you need to enjoy it. I had over a friend from high school named Laser. He was here with his daughter who was in, I think it was 8th grade at the time. She was participating in the Chidon HaTanach, the International Bible Contest. Who's familiar with the Chidon HaTanach? Pretty unbelievable if you ever watched it on Yom HaTzmaut. It is amazing that you have these, some elementary school, mostly high school students, and they learn large portions of the Tanakh, and they come and they compete. It's a worldwide. I remember my brother competed, and he won in Los Angeles. He went to New York, and he competed there, and he placed, but he didn't go to Israel. So this whole process of competing, moving up in the ranks. So she was in 6th grade when she started studying. 7th grade, she won in the United States. She was able to go to Israel to compete in 8th grade. She was the youngest there. Everyone else was in high school. She was in elementary school. She was of 70 participants that made it to that level. She placed number 10, which is amazing because she's American. She doesn't have the language that all the Israelis do. So I sent my friend Laser an email. I said, how much was she learning each day to prepare, and how did she keep up her motivation? So he said she was up at 5:45 a.m. That's early in the morning. A.m. means morning. 5:45 a.m. she was up, and she increased her learning by 6 hours a day. Studying 6 hours a day, Tanakh, preparing for the Chidon HaTanakh. She was going up 3 years. I think it increased. I don't think the first year she was doing 6 hours, but more in the second year, third year, 6 hours a day. So I said to him, I emailed, ask her please for me, how did she keep up the resolve to be studying at that level? And he said 4 points. Number one, by having a goal in mind. We need to have a goal out there. Like what? What type of goals in learning could we have?
Finish
Masechtas by a certain time, right? Not Armei HaVestrin, right? I'm going to finish Chagiga by Megillah, 30 daf, right? So by all right. So having dead goals, very good. What else? Goals are good, right? All right, let's keep on going. Number one, by having a goal in mind. Number two, by first taking a moment to appreciate the significance of what she was doing. Think about this. This isn't a small thing that we were trying to accomplish. This is very significant. Number three, by setting short-term checkpoints along the way. The goal, Shas, is a little bit hard. I want to learn Shas. I want to learn all Gemara, Mishnayos, Zohar, everything. I want to get it. We're not going to get that done, right? So break it into chunks and have signposts along the way. So break the larger goals into smaller goals. And by finding something new every time she studied so that it was not just repetition. I was just reading an article about a guy named Alexei. We actually had him over for Shabbos. He was learned in Machon Yaakov, I believe. He was learning, I forget what, Masechta, and he did Chazara, and they decided they were going to Chazar it X many times. I think they decided 40 times they were going to Chazar it. Chazar was Chazrusa 40 times. Then he saw the Gemara that said that there's a big difference between Chazaring something 100 times and 101 times, that you're Oved Hashem if you do it 101 times. They said, okay. And he's learning with his chavrusa over Skype. He was in yeshiva here, and his chavrusa was somewhere else. And he said, okay, let's go for 101 times. And they chazered a masechta 101 times. And the person writing the article about him says, and that wasn't just quick chazara, because Hebrew was new to him. And he said, it's for example, when he was at the siyum for this masechta, it took him 10 minutes to say the Hadran Alach and the Kaddish, because his Hebrew was not very good. So if he's chazering, it was a very belabored. He put in a lot of hours doing that. Okay, so the next, Next part of this. Feitza, number one, we need to stay motivated, and we've given some suggestions on to stay motivated. Now, that same article that I referred to before, an open letter to my friend on the slide, he gives a number of other suggestions. But before the suggestions, I want to read something that I think is very critical. Firstly, realize that though you're learning in whatever quantity will not be the same depth as during your yeshiva years, it is equally, if not more, beloved to Hashem. You won't get that. You're learning 10 hours in yeshiva here, and you're learning 1 or 2 hours while you're working. And he's saying, and I don't know who wrote this article, but nonetheless he's saying that is more beloved to Hashem. How is that possible?
Quality.
It's harder.
Quality? Is the quality? The challenge is
much
harder for that hour than the 10, 12, or the 15 hours you guys are learning each day. I'll tell you an example of that. That's Mesiras Nefesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to look at our Mesiras Nefesh. We're working all day, but we're still getting up at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, 5:30 to go and learn. I have a couple of friends that are fairly senior in the Mir. One is a Rosh Chabura. They have an organization that puts out 12,000 pamphlets, more than a pamphlet, like booklets every single month on Parsha, called the Iyuna Parsha. So they have to fly off, and they don't get paid at all. They often have to fly to the United States to meet with donors to make sure that there are funds. They have to support 8 people who are editing for them, and the distribution cost and printing cost of 12,000 booklets every month. So they fly off, and one of them, I guess they were jet lagged, so they were in the shul at 3:30 in the morning. These are really from guys. And they said they could not believe the number of business people, so people who are working in the secular workplace in the shul learning early morning to make sure that they got their learning done in before they went out for the day. And these are two guys, senior people at the Mir Yeshiva, saying they could not believe the Mesiras Nefesh of the people that are out there in the secular workplace in order to make sure that they were successfully learning in advance of going out to work. Okay, so these are the Eitzas. When it comes to this article, because Eitza, number one, is you have to know that your learning is critical to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Half hour, hour, hour and a half, Moser Nefesh, that is fantastic. Next, he says, Daf Yomi is excellent. Daf Yomi is not for everyone. It may be a daf a day, it may be an amud a day, it may be a halacha a day, maybe a mishnah a day, but covering ground based on goals, something every day, make it bite-sized is very important. Going to a shir, go to a daf yomi shir, a different shir, a daily shir, so you have other people that you feel committed to, that you have a rav, that you have a connection to, that's also very important. And one thing that the Chofetz Chaim talks about in his Torah Habayis is have a mesechta that you know clearly, even by heart. No mesechta, it can be the shortest one, but so you feel you have some ownership of your learning, that is a very important goal. Next, Eitza, we've talked about motivation, we've talked about Daf Yomi, daily, shir, etc. Chavrusa. How important is a chavrusa? A little bit, a lot? What do you guys think? Yeah. What does a chavrusa do? Either makes you miserable, or... What does a chavrusa do for you?
Whips you.
Whips you into shape, keeps you there, make sure you're on time if the right chavrusa, makes you stay committed. There's a phrase, O chavrusa, O mitusa. Give me a chavrusa or give me death. Right? So chavrusa is very important. If it's the right chavrusa, yeah, Matt.
But everything a chavrusa can do right, it can also do wrong.
It's got to be the right chavrusa.
Right.
It has to be absolutely correct. If it's the wrong chavrusa, not good. If he's not making you stick with it, my chavrusa in yeshiva, one of them, who I learned after night seder with him in my first year yeshiva, and during university, he kept me there. He kept me there, chained. So that's the type of chavrusa that you indeed want to. And something else that's very interesting, it's more and more popular nowadays, is joining in a chabura. A chabura, anyone from England here? Anyone familiar with the chabura? It's very big in England. It's also in other places also. It's like an early morning group that gets together that has a magid shir, somebody who gives shir, but they learn chavrusas and then they have shir together. So they have both. Learning about chavrusa and a shir, that context is very good. I've heard of a number in England in particular, 60, 70, 80 guys learning early in the morning together and going to shir together. Very powerful, very popular and a great idea also. There's an article also in that book that I referred to, The Ethical Imperative. It's called More Strategies for the Baal Nisai, and More Strategies, Keeping Your Head in the Game, Motivated to Learning. So he talks a lot about the Chabura. He says one very interesting part. He says it's interesting, most of the current members, this is written by the head of the Chabura, he says most of the members of the Chabura were night people, not morning people. And they were able to successfully change over from being night people to morning people, to the effect that even on Shabbos, they got so used to waking up during the week that even on Shabbos, when the Chabura didn't officially get together, they would get together with their Chavrusas and continue learning. Okay, so that's another Eitzah, is joining a Chabura. Next, use all time available to you. Give me an example of when is open time that you would have.
Journeys.
Traveling, commuting is a great time. What should you do on a commute? Learn how. Listen to Shir is good. MP3 player. Listen to Shir about staying motivated to learn 5, 10, 20 years out of yeshiva. That's a good thing to listen to. What else? Get the Sefer up. There's the LIRR, Long Island Railroad. I got that right. The LIR for over 20 years has had a Daf Yomi Shir in the last car. They've had 3 Siyum Ashases on the LIR. The last one I was reading, they invited all the prior conductors and stuff to participate. It was like a big thing. Like, everyone who worked there was participating in the Daf Yomi, and they actually added on. It's like the 7:23 a.m. train or something like that. So they added on another Shir on a different train. So use the time well. That is excellent time. Anytime you have, always carry a Sefer with you. They have the small Kahati, Mishnayos, everything now comes in bite size. You don't even need to carry a book. You can use your smartphone for this stuff nowadays, although you will typically get distracted by the emails and the WhatsApps and the this and the that. So maybe take a Sefer along with you. That is a wise thing to do. Okay, next. Next point is very important, being in the proper environment. For example, being in the right shul, being a member of the right shul, that people are inspired to be learning. Being in the right community. Give me examples of good communities for learning. South Africa. South Africa, where? Jerusalem is number one, obviously. South Africa, where? Johannesburg.
Yeah.
Or I see amazing things about Or Sameach in Johannesburg. Yeah. Cape Town is a little smaller, right?
Yeah.
I've heard of both of those cities, right? Cape Town is 2 words also, you should know. I looked that up recently. Sorry, my lack of education. But I did major in international relations. Okay, so in any case, being in the proper environment, right shul, right friends, that learning is important to them. So that is also critical. I have here some responses from prior students. So these are people that have been at a yeshiva fairly recently, 1, 2, 3, 4 years, and I asked them, what's keeping you motivated to be learning? So I want to go through this. One responded as follows: I've been thinking about the question you sent, and I think a big part of continuing to learn is to stay motivated. When you're excited to learn and to be a religious Jew, it makes things easier. It's very important to surround yourself with other religious people. He was actually in medical school in residency, and he says, when no one Jewish is around, it's tough. More recently, there was another from doctor, and they spent the day together making rounds and talking Torah. He says that was very positive for him. There are times, though, where it is tough to be motivated. He says he lives in a Long Island suburb where there are few shuls and little Torah opportunities. So he says it's best, I try my best to surround myself with Torah, going away for Shabbos, learning online or on the phone. In the tough times, reconnect to yeshiva, keep on learning. You have to get through the tough times. There are ups and downs. Even during the tough times, reach out to your Rebbeim. Give a call to them. I just got a call yesterday, 2 days ago. Someone I hadn't heard from in a long time. Says, just want to reach out and say hi. Give a call. Reach out. Speak with friends who are still in yeshiva, still in learning, and get reconnected. Someone said it nicely this last Shabbos. We are swimming upstream against the current while everyone else is going downstream, right? Can relate to that. Who else has been there in the secular workplace? We're going in one direction, trying to go up, and the stream, the current, is trying to push us down. If we stop learning and moving, we will be pulled with the current down automatically. Okay, so that's unfortunately going to happen. Next, There is, I had a student who was, I mentioned him before, he was in Granada Medical School, so he sent me an email in 2012 as follows: as far as learning independently, I was doing well at the start of the term, and as the exams approached, I was less diligent with my Jewish studies. Things got tougher when he got into exams. Then he says, but I anticipate when I move to Jewish community back to New York, he says, I anticipate things will get better. I checked back with him in mid-2014. I said, how's learning going? He says, things are great. Baruch Hashem. He had moved back to Springfield, New Jersey, in a supportive Orthodox community, starting his fourth year of medical school. And he says he's got a chavrusa, and things are going much better. You can imagine being in New York, New Jersey, then Granada. That is a much better community to be in. Okay, from London. Back in London, we've been here for 4 months, etc. Learning is good. I'm a member of a shul with many learning options. I'm still rolling with Daf Yomi and have taken to learning Mishnah Torah and the Mora Nevuchim when I have some spare time. But of course, it's difficult to fit that in on top of a busy work day, etc., etc., etc. We have Eitzas. There are ways to keep your head in the game. You need to keep up with it. Another critical point is having a supportive wife. An Ezer Kenegdo that cannot be understated, one that is machshiv, that thinks that views learning as important and supportive, even though it is adding a burden to an additional burden to her handling household chores and Mir Tashem kids, that is something that should be important to the family. Okay, I just want to go on to the next step. Any questions up till now? Everything is as clear as day. What are we talking about? Learning Torah. Is it important? Yes. Until we pass away at 120, it's an important thing to do. Okay, so Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, he's a Rav in Boca Raton. Anyone know what Boca Raton is?
Florida.
Florida is in what country?
America.
Northeast, right? Northeast? Southeast. Florida's on the southeast. That's why they get hit by tornadoes and Cuba issues. Okay, so Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, the rabbi in Boca Raton, gave an unbelievable drasha on Rosh Hashanah, 5776. It's available online. You can do a search for it. And I wasn't going to go into this, but I'll just mention this interesting story. It's only somewhat related. He starts out his drasha by talking about a Judge Mindy Glazer. She's a judge in Miami-Dade, Florida. And one time there was somebody who came in front of her, 49-year-old Arthur Booth, appeared before her for a bond hearing. And he had been arrested the previous day for breaking into home, stealing a car, and running from the police. He caused two car accidents along the way until he crashed the car. So there he is, in court, in front of this judge, and they're going through the process, and as she's shuffling papers in the midst of this, and this is on video, it's an unbelievable video, I've seen it, in the midst of this, she turns to him. She, the judge, turns to Arthur Booth in front of him and says, I have a question for you. Did you go to Nautilus Medical School? Nautilus Middle School. So Booth looked at her and recognized her. Right? He's sitting there in cuffs. He turns to her, he looks at her, recognized her. They had been in school together. If you can imagine. And Booth, he covers up his face with both hands, and overwhelmed with emotion, he starts crying, saying, oh my goodness, over and over again, seven times. This is what's going on in the court. And the judge, she turns to him and says, I'm sorry to see you here. I always wondered what happened to you. And she turns to the court now, and she says, this was the nicest kid in school. Everyone liked him. I used to play football with him, she says. Everyone used to play with this guy, and I can't believe that this is what has happened to you. And he starts crying. That's what's going on. In court, on film, watch it. And afterward, Booth's cousin was interviewed and asked, like, why did he have this, like, breakdown right in court? Like, oh my goodness, I'm not believing. And she responds, his cousin responds, explaining what was going on. He probably was thinking, wow, I had those opportunities and those abilities that should have been up me up there. I should have been the judge there, and I wasn't. He was overwhelmed with emotion because he was filled with remorse and the thoughts of what could have been. Fairly powerful. Fairly powerful. So he goes on, and it's the drasha, and he says, so what happened here? Right? What do we do have to do to keep our lives on track as opposed to becoming an Arthur Booth? So he quotes Rav Kalonymus Kalman Shapiro. He's a Hasidic Rav. He was the Rav of the Warsaw Ghetto. He survived the Warsaw Ghetto uprising, but he was murdered by the Nazis. And in a writing of his, he says that there's a major distinction when we set goals for ourselves. Are we committing to resolutions, or are we having wishes and dreams? It's an important distinction. He says, is it a resolution, or is it simply a wish? Resolutions can change our lives. Wishes we will accomplish nothing with. So he says, for example, the pauper who goes and gets a job, trying to work and trying to earn a buck and earn a parnasa, that is a resolution. But somebody hoping he's going to win the lottery, that's a wish. That's a wish. And he continues, every Jew would like to be a tzaddik, but that is no more than a wish. That is not a resolution. People say, I want to sleep through the night through and I want to be a tzaddik in the morning. That is a pipe dream. That is a wish. But a resolution requires us to work hard. He says the real secret to change is to stop wishing and to start making real resolutions. Personal growth is the result of making a plan, spelling it out, and holding ourselves accountable to keeping to it. Very important. Very important. It's not a wish. Can't make missions, we need to make resolutions. So he then tells a story about somebody that I know from yeshiva. Okay, I'm not going to mention the name. He does in the story. And he says he was speaking with this guy. We'll call him, give me a name.
Jim.
He was speaking with Jim. And Jim was telling him about his daily schedule. So Jim says, you know, I'm up. I'm at the Daf Yomi early in the morning, 5:30, 5:45. I stay in shul for minyan. I learn on the way to work. I learn on the way back from work. I make mincha for minyan. I make mar for minyan. But Jim says it hasn't always been like that, unfortunately. I grew up going to yeshivas my whole life. Went off to Israel, learned for a year in yeshiva. Came back, and as time went on, I got stuck in the rut of daily life. What's that? Working, making it big, earning a lot of money, spending time with the kids, coaching Little League, doing this, doing that. And over time, and this was, he was out of yeshiva a good 20 years, over that time period, he stopped going to minyan, stopped learning, stopped davening altogether. If you can imagine such a thing. Stop davening altogether. And then what happened? What changed things? On August 1st, 2012, everything changed. He went to the 12th Siyum HaShas. Was anyone there? No one was there.
What year was that?
The 12th Siyum HaShas.
What year?
2012. MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. 90,000 people. I had the privilege to be there. 90,000 people coming together for a Siyum HaShas. The worldwide Siyum HaShas. And Rabbi Yisachar Fran gets up. If you have not seen the speech, it is available on YouTube. I know I'm not supposed to say that word in the base of Medrash. Watch it. Do a search, Rabbi Fran, 12 Siyum HaShas, 2012. Unbelievable. So Rabbi Fran gets up, 22-minute speech, and he says as follows. He spoke about the Baskol, the heavenly voice, that asks each one of us why we are doing more to learn and strengthen with our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Fran was adamant in suggesting that in response to the proverbial Baskol, quote, quoting what Rabbi Fran said, 2012, every one of us must leave here with a plan. He challenged the attendees to, quote, learn a daf a day. If you can't learn a daf a day, make it an amud a day, or a daf of Mishnah Berurah a day, or a Mishnah a day. And then Rabbi Fran turns to the crowd and he screams, at least learn something. Do something. You can't walk out without a plan, says Rabbi Fran. And that spoke to Jim's heart. Next day, Jim wakes up. Now, he was at the Siyum HaShas not because he finished Shas. He wasn't learning. He went because his grandfathers had been learning for the Siyum HaShas. So he went to show respect for them. He wakes up the next morning after the Siyum HaShas. He starts learning Daf Yomi. Then he starts missing days. He says, this isn't working. I need a plan. And he got back on track. He says, my plan is I'm going to go to Shir. He went to Daf Yomi Shir. He says, okay, I'm already in shul. What am I going to do? Leave? They're about to daven Shachris. He says, okay, I'll just stay for Shachris. What am I going to do? Months go by. He says, this is silly. I'm learning in the morning. I'm going davening Shacharis. I'm going to Minyan. And I'm not even davening Mincha Maariv at all. Okay, I'll start davening Mincha. I'll start davening Maariv. But why am I not going to Shul? So he goes back to Shul for Mincha Maariv. And then he really starts learning. And then he starts learning on his track. And he says it all started with Jim's plan. He had a plan. He had goals. You need to know where the pitfalls lie also, and you need to know to address them. So that's what he did. Pitfalls were, okay, it's not working for myself. I need to find a different way to do this. Now, Rabbi Goldberg also, he put out a resolution chart. He says, this was for Rosh Hashanah, he put out a chart. If you go on and find his Dvar Torah, he says it's a two-pager that people should fill in. And it's interesting, he says the resolutions he divides in three. Bein Adam LaMakom, between us and God. Bein Adam LaChavero, between us and our friends. And Bein Adam LaAtzmo, between ourselves, for things we're going to do for ourselves. Dieting, what else? Exercising, healthy exercise, healthy eating, getting enough sleep, stop texting while driving, having an annual physical with your doctor. Oh well. What's interesting on this resolution, he says he's not into just resolutions, I'm going to do this, dreams, right? But he goes through in detail, he says, this year I resolve to, what am I going to resolve to do? Kovei eating the Torah. Okay, that's not enough. This is how I plan to keep it up. And what are the steps you're going to do? Which are the suggestions are you going to pull on in order to ensure you keep it? And then he goes to the next step, step number three. This is what will likely get in my way and try to knock me off course, right? You have to know what the Yetzer is going to do to try to deflect me. You got to know if you're in a negotiation, what the other side is going to try to do. If you're in a deposition, whatever. If you're dealing with other people, you got to anticipate what's going to happen. So that's number three. And number four, when I know what obstacles they're going to put up, this is what I will do to overcome or manage those obstacles. So he says you need to come in with a plan. Two more points. I want to get back to our initial discussion of Yoni Fink and his weight loss challenges. So Yoni himself at the end of the article said as follows: all of life is a marathon, I mused. It's not about the actual event of pounding the pavement and racing to the finish line. It's about training for the event day in, day out. Right? It's about going through the effort, going through it. It's about starting another. It's not about a fad diet, losing 15 pounds a month. It's about eating healthy and exercising every day. And it's not about showing up to Seder when and if you feel like it. It's about pounding the bench in the base medrash no matter what kind of mood you're in and no matter how tough the sugi is. Commitment, dedication, consistency, CDC. So I just want to end off with a story. Hopefully you'll remember the story in 5, 10, 20 years. It's story involving Rosh Hashanah Shvadran. He was a mashkiach in a very prominent yeshiva, and there was a boy that was missing all day, Sunday and Monday. So Tuesday morning, Rosh Shvadran sees him, and he says, goes over to the boy. He says, you know, you've been in yeshiva 2 years, you haven't missed one day, and now you missed 2 days in a row. Is everything okay? Are you feeling okay? And the boy said, yeah, everything's fine, no problem. So Rabbi Shvadran said, so why'd you miss? Because we missed you. And the boy didn't want to answer. So finally Rabbi Shvadran said, you know, you can tell me. It's not a problem. Were you ill? He says, well, actually, and he says a little bit abashedly, this is the championship for the Tel Aviv Maccabees. It's a soccer team. Soccer, football, you know, depending on the country that you're from. The Americans will call it soccer. It's like the sport we never play. So he says, you know, it's the championship right now. So I went on Sunday and Monday. And in fact, I'm likely going to miss tomorrow because I'm going to be there also. It's the final day of the championships. So Rabbi Shvadran, not judgmental, he says, you know, tell me about this game, soccer. I'm interested. It must be really important for you if you're missing yeshiva after not having missed a day for 2 years. Tell me about the game. So the boy starts explaining how soccer works. You have a goal here, goal there. You have 11 people on a team. And you try to scrimmage, you go back and forth, and you try to kick the ball into the opposing team's goal. And you're supposed to be doing that all along while there's a goalie trying to stop getting the ball in. So Rav Shvadran said, so why didn't you just go at night and just kick the ball in? Why do you have to, like, we'll just do it at night when no one's around? So the boy, the student says, Rebbe, you don't get it. You don't understand. That's the whole challenge, is when there's the goalie there and the other team trying to deflect it. That's what's going on. And Rav Shravan said, listen to what you just said. He says, if the goal is empty and there's no Yetzer Hara trying to push back on you, there's no challenge. It's only when the goalie is there, when there's a fight that you're trying to push up, when you have the goalie trying to block you, and that's when you get it in, that's when you score a goal. And it's the same thing in yeshiva. It's easy to be in yeshiva, come to Shirim on time, come to Shachris on time, but when you get out there, starting with Bein Hazmanim, it's a challenge, and even more so 5, 10, 15, 20 years out when you're working there, when there's that goalie out there in the Yetzer Hara, that's when it's really challenging. And then that's when I really hope that you will incorporate the suggestions that we have gone through today. Guys, have a great week.
Thank you very much.
Rabbi, thank you.
You're going to sit these two together. So you need to clap.
Can they vote for that? Can they vote for that? Oh, thank you.
Yes, no, I vote. I have to vote. Oh,
yeah. Dude, that's pretty cool.
Down at the beginning.
Okay.
So they can see an audio.
Sure.
Stop, I laughed. I really enjoyed it.
No, I'm not doing
it. Oh.
Thank you, Rob.
I
think it's pretty amazing.